On tonight's KRBD Evening Report, Ketchikan's City Council will talk about possible solutions to a growing drug problem in Ketchikan. Plus, it's time to check your bank account. All that and more coming up. First, let's take a look at the weather. Tonight we'll have numerous rain showers with lows around 40 and southeast winds to 15 miles an hour. Wednesday, rain with highs around 50 and southeast winds to 20 miles an hour. Numerous rain showers Wednesday night with lows around 40 and southeast winds to 15 miles an hour. Thursday, rain that may be heavy at times with highs around 50 and southeast winds to 15 miles an hour. And widespread rain showers Thursday night with locally heavy rainfall possible. It's the KRBD Evening Report. I'm Eric Stone. What should Ketchikan do to address a rise in opioid overdoses? It's a big question and not one with easy answers, Ketchikan Mayor-elect Dave Kiefer said at a recent city council meeting.
I think this whole process is going to be a large dragon, and we're going to grab the tail of it, and we're going to see how badly it burns us or not. But it should be interesting.
The city council is planning to take a crack at coming up with solutions at a special meeting scheduled for this Thursday. Kiefer says it's an early step in tackling the problem.
The goal of that meeting initially, we're going to focus at least initially on the opiate overdose situation, is to get as many of the different groups in town in the same room and at least start talking to each other. Because I think what we've had is a lot of, unfortunately, with different groups siloing, and even with the city, we don't know what's being done.
The meeting comes after public advocacy by resident Dave Timmerman. He's repeatedly pressed Ketchikan's city and borough governments to do more to address a growing drug problem in Ketchikan.
People are dying.
In August, the former port operations director told the council he'd seen the area's growing drug problem take its toll on his former staff.
Over the next many years, I've kept in contact with all those kids. All of them. They get a hold of me. We've lost at least three of them to suicide since then. We've lost some to overdoses since then. We lost one to overdose just a few weeks ago.
Ketchikan's fire department says overdose calls more than quadrupled in the first 7 months of this year compared to the same time last year. City Council member Mark Flora says drug addiction is tied to other problems in Ketchikan, notably homelessness.
I think the homelessness issue and these addiction and dependency issues are joined at the hip. I don't think they're separable.
Drug addiction was among the top four causes of homelessness in Ketchikan, according to last year's survey by Ketchikan-based domestic violence advocacy group Women in Safe Homes. Other top factors include job loss, eviction, and domestic violence. Flora says it's unlikely any cheap, quick fixes will solve the problem.
Part of the solution is going to be funding, and we're going to need to be engaged with the community on what it is they also want to see, because there's going to be a funding component, and we're going to have to solve that.
But City Council member Janalee Gage says she's optimistic.
This is going to be a big undertaking. However, I think that with all the individuals in the room who bring a lot to the table and the organizations that we have in this community, we can do it. It's just going to be, it may be many nights of tearing your hair out.
Kiefer says it's a problem that's lasted decades, but he says he's glad to see the process getting underway.
My point at this point is starting somewhere.
The meeting starts at 6 p.m. Thursday in the Ted Ferry Civic Center. The city council will hear from groups working on drug addiction and members of the public before starting their own conversation about the best way forward. The meeting is broadcast on local cable channels and live streamed at the city's website. Health officials reported 5 new cases of COVID-19 on Ketchikan's pandemic dashboard as of 5 p.m. Wednesday. 49 cases are active. 2 people remain hospitalized with COVID-19 at Peace Health Ketchikan Medical Center, according to the dashboard. There were no new deaths linked to COVID-19 reported in Ketchikan on the State Health Department's dashboard. 8 COVID-19-related deaths have been reported in Ketchikan. In the past 7 days, there have been 45 new positives. The state-issued COVID alert level for Ketchikan is high, the maximum level. Ketchikan's COVID-19 dashboard is available at the borough's website, that's kgbak.us, and the state's is at data.coronavirus.alaska.gov. On Prince of Wales Island, health officials reported 1 new case of COVID-19 Wednesday. It's in a community of fewer than 1,000 people, and it's a resident attributed to secondary spread. The state-issued risk level for the Prince of Wales Hyder census area is high. The census area includes Prince of Wales Island, Metlakatla, Hyder, Port Alexander, and Cake, according to health officials. More information is available at the Craig Public Health COVID-19 hotline. That's 1-888-894-1321 and on the Prince of Wales Health Network and Wellness Coalition Facebook page. In their most recent update on Saturday, authorities in Metlakatla reported zero new cases. Officials said there were two active cases at that time. The risk level was level 2, the second highest mark. Updates about COVID-19 in Metlakatla are posted on the Metlakatla Indian Community Facebook page. Juneau police have confirmed that a body found near the Auk Bay Ferry Terminal is a man who's been missing since late August. Juneau police got the call Tuesday morning from the medical examiner's office that the man was Joseph Clayton. Clayton went missing on August 20th when he went on a hike and never returned. He's from Oregon, and family came up to Juneau to search for him. On October 6th, police found an old campsite and a man's body near the ferry terminal. They contacted Clayton's family, who posted on Facebook that Clayton was found. But at that point, he hadn't been identified quite yet, and Juneau police couldn't say it was Clayton. In the post, the family thanked the Juneau community for their help in searching for Clayton. The school district in Haines will keep its COVID-19 policies in place. That was the consensus reached last week by the school board as the community comes out of another wave of coronavirus cases. KHNS's Corinne Smith reports.
COVID-19 cases surged in Haines last month, reaching as high as 43 active cases in a town of about 2,000 people. There were at least four cases on campus, and dozens of close contacts have had to quarantine since the start of school. Masks are required on campus, and the school provides rapid asymptomatic COVID testing for students, staff, and some families that homeschool their kids. Haines senior Avery Williamson is the student rep on the school board. She says student athletes have been tested twice a week because they often travel, and she says that likely contained wider outbreaks.
When there was the positive case in cross country, that was pretty stressful because I was in the middle of that. We were worried about our season and just our safety, but our mitigation kept us all safe, and that was really remarkable. And I'm confident that we'll continue with our indoor sports, which are a little higher stress because they're inside.
Superintendent Roy Getchell says he feels the current COVID protocols, like masks, are working and doesn't want to see that change.
We went through some uncharted territory to start the year and some things that we hadn't done before. We've really tested our mitigations. And while not perfect, I don't know that anything is perfect during COVID, but I feel really good about how things went, how we were able to work through it, keep our students safe, keep things continuous.
The superintendent says so far no closures have been needed. He says he's proud that Haines' 251 public school students haven't had their classes disrupted.
We didn't have to cancel school. We didn't cancel any practices. We didn't cancel anything. We did have students that were in quarantine that we worked with their families on, but those were not school-related quarantines, except for a couple of students during an athletic situation that we worked through.
Younger people are catching COVID, though. The largest number of cases identified in Haines have been among those 20 and younger. That's according to state public health. Only those over 12 can be vaccinated. And of that slice of the population, 73% have been fully vaccinated in Haines. Third grade teacher Sophia Armstrong says faculty had been nervous about an outbreak in the schools, and she urged the district to keep its precautions in place.
I was worried that my class was going to fall like dominoes with how contagious the Delta variant is. And so I'm just really glad because only the children who came to school with it left school with it. And it's just really lovely to have full classrooms again and know that we're all safe and healthy.
The Haines Teachers Union also weighed in. Haines Education Association President Kristen White read a letter on behalf of the union that applauded the work of the district's Health Advisory Committee, which brings together the district's administration with local health providers.
We are fortunate to work in a district that values both safety and continuity of learning.
It was in this atmosphere that Haines Superintendent Roy Getchell recommended that the board keep its COVID protocols in place for at least another month.
Because I feel like we're not out of the woods yet. We want to keep things going. We've got momentum with learning. We've got momentum with activities. We want to maintain that.
In a related development, the Federal Centers for Disease Control announced Friday it will be reviewing vaccine eligibility for kids ages 5 to 11. That could mean vaccines could be available for school-age children under 12 as early as next month. In Haines for KHNS News, I'm Corinne Smith.
Well, it's time to check your bank account. Some Alaskans are starting to see their $1,114 PFDs, with some already reporting pending deposits scheduled for this Thursday. That's according to the State Department of Revenue. The department projected last month that PFDs would go out this week for people who signed up to receive them by direct deposit. No direct deposits went out to any accounts on Monday, since it was a federal holiday. Banks may process the deposits differently, but the department says, quote, "We are hopeful Alaskans will see the funds in their accounts before the end of this week." Paper checks are slated to go out the week of October 25th for Alaskans who did not sign up for direct deposits. An estimated 643,000 Alaskans will receive dividends this year. Voters this month in Petersburg overwhelmingly supported bonding to overhaul and increase local electrical generation capacity. The bulk of the $7.8 million in bond debt will pay for a complete overhaul of the borough's hydroelectric plant at Blind Slough. The city of Petersburg installed the small hydroelectric plant on southern Mitkoff Island a century ago. Most of the equipment there dates back to the 1950s. It produces about a quarter of the community's electrical needs and is Petersburg's cheapest source of power. Utility Director Carl Hagerman is thankful that voters gave him the green light for that project.
And again, I keep saying it, but we're standing on the shoulders of some very smart people that almost 100 years ago decided to move forward with the project out at Crystal Lake and Blind Slough. And very, very happy that the community supported that project and will be able to carry on that legacy far into the future.
Over 82% said yes to the debt. That will mean rate hikes for local electrical customers in Petersburg. The Borough Assembly will see a proposal on those increases this year. Those will also pay for an expected increase in the wholesale rate from the main source of Petersburg's hydroelectricity. That's the Southeast Alaska Power Agency, which also provides power to Wrangell and Ketchikan. Contingent on the outcome of the vote, Petersburg's Assembly in February agreed to purchase over $2 million of equipment, including a new generator and turbine from a British company. Hagerman says there are still some details to work out on that agreement, but they'll move forward on having that equipment built and then focus on construction.
We'll be working with our engineering firm on the project, McMillan Jacobs, to complete final construction design and get a construction contract out to bid and hopefully awarded by the time the equipment shows up, all rolling towards the goal of having the project kick off in the summer of 2023. And hopefully by fall of 2023, all improvements will be made and we'll be working from a new powerhouse.
A portion of the bond will add another standby diesel generator to be used during hydro outages. The local utility has a consultant looking at standby power needs and expects a report on that this fall before moving forward with the purchase of the additional generator. That's all we've got on tonight's KRBD Evening Report. Thanks so much for joining us. You can get this show as a podcast on your favorite podcast app or on your smart speaker. Just ask that smart speaker to play the KRBD Evening Report. You can also just play KRBD, or you can turn on your radio. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Eric Stone.